The friendship factor. How to get closer to the people you care for. This was gifted to my father as a Christmas gift by his friend. The reviews for this book are A Winner by Charlie's Shed, full of helpful insights about the mysteries of human love and intimacy, by Bruce Larson. Read this book. It will certainly change and enhance the way you love, by Paula and Dick McDonald. Here is Possibility Thinking Wrapped with Reality, by Dr. Robert H. Schuller. It was first published in 1979. It is written by Alan Loy McGinnis. Chapter 1. The Rich Rewards of Friendship. Life is to be fortified by many friendships. To love and be loved is the greatest happiness of existence. Sydney Smith. Have you ever wondered at the way certain people are able to draw others to them and gain the admiration and affection of friends? Some people with average looks attract the opposite sex like iron shavings to a magnet. Business executives who may not appear very successful sometimes move in an extensive network of loyal friends. Such people may or may not be wealthy. They may or may not have high intelligence or expensive educations, but somewhere in their personalities is an ingredient causing them to be respected and admired. It is a friendship factor. My work as a counselor has furnished me with an unusual window on the interconnections of human beings. I have talked to thousands of people about their closest relationships, and in watching what the successful lovers do, I have learned some of their secrets. The aim of this book is to pass those secrets on to you. How the friendship factor can make you an expert at intimacy. In research at our clinic, my colleagues and I have discovered that friendship is a springboard to every other love. Friendships spill over onto the other important relationships of life. People with no friends usually have a diminished capacity for sustaining any kind of love. They tend to go through a succession of marriages, be estranged from various family members, and have trouble getting along at work. On the other hand, those who learn how to love their friends tend to make long and fulfilling marriages, get along well with the people at work, and enjoy their children. Soon after Jack Benny died, George Burns was interviewed on TV. "Jack and I had a wonderful friendship for nearly 55 years," Burns said. "Jack never walked out on me when I sang a song, and I never walked out on him when he played the violin. We laughed together, we played together, we worked together, we ate together. I suppose that for many of those years, we talked every single day. If we knew nothing else about those two, we could safely assume that they had solid relationships in other areas of their lives." Why? Because friendship is a model for all intimate encounters. The basic ingredients for a good marriage, according to sociologist Andrew Greeley, are friendship plus sex. And what about our relationships with our parents and our children? Henry Luce, founder of Time Life Inc., probably influenced world opinion more than any publisher in history. His magazine circulated to more than 13 million people, with international editions in 200 countries. He not only constructed a financial empire, he also revolutionized modern journalism. Luce frequently reminisced about his boyhood years as a missionary son in Shantung, China. In the evenings, he and his father had gone for long walks outside the compound, and his father had talked to him as if he were an adult. The problems of administering a school and the philosophical questions occupying him were all grist for their conversational mill. "He treated me as if I were his equal," said Luce. Their bond was tight because they were friends, and both father and son were nourished by the relationship. Why women have more friends? "Are you close to anybody?" I asked. "Is there someone you can tell everything to?" She was a new patient reeling from a divorce, and I was trying to determine whether she was a candidate for psychotherapy. "Oh yes," she answered brightly. "I would never have made it through this mess without her. Actually, she's 26 years older than me, but we tell each other all our secrets. We're life friends. She is a fortunate woman, and we agreed at the end of the hour that as long as she had a confidant, she didn't need a shrink. Why are such friendships so rare among men? Conditioning, of course. In our society, except to shake hands, men are not even allowed to touch each other. Dick and Paula McDonald explain the phenomenon. Most men have had no practice in the art of intimacy, nor role models to point the way. Little girls can walk to school hand in hand, hold each other up skating, hug and cry and say, "You're my best friend. I need you. I love you." Little boys wouldn't dare. The enormous blackening cloud of homosexuality is always present, and the devastating power of the snicker begins in playground days. Fag is a word every little boy learns to fear, and it forever after affects his behavior toward other men who might become his friends. And ultimately, of course, it affects his behavior toward the woman he will meet. Some of America's leading psychologists and therapists were asked how many men ever have real friends. The bleak replies were, not nearly enough, and too few. Most guessed at 10%. Richard Farson, professor at the Humanistic Psychology Institute in San Francisco, says, "Millions of people in America have never had 1 minute in their whole lifetime where they could let down and share with another person their deeper feelings. Since so few males have been allowed the luxury of openness and vulnerability in a relationship, they are not aware of the gaping void in their emotional lives. In short, they don't know what they're missing." In a recent study, British sociologist Marianne Crawford found that middle-aged men and women had considerably different definitions of friendship. By an overwhelming margin, women talked about trust and confidentiality, while men described a friend as someone I go out with or someone whose company I enjoy. For the most part, men's friendships revolve around activities, while women's revolve around sharing. A man will describe as my very good friend a person who's an occasional tennis partner or someone he just met 5 minutes ago. But are they friends? Hardly. As Paula McDonald makes clear, young women are newly aware of these issues and increasingly selective. "I think more women are looking for a sensitive man today," says Lynn Sherman, "and it really doesn't make any difference to us if he can lift up his couch with one hand or two. I think it's a responsive friend type person most younger women want now." It's okay to be an introvert. When I urge that you devote yourself to friendship, I am not urging you to become an extrovert. Some people suppose that their basic shyness is a problem. One evening, a neurosurgeon and I stood silently at the window, watching the lights of the city come on far below us. It was not easy for him to begin counseling. That was obvious from the way he nursed his coffee and felt me out with some talk, small talk. We had arranged this first meeting at the end of the day, so he would not have to risk an encounter with a doctor friend in our elevator. Finally, he took a deep breath, like a man about to dive into a cold swimming pool, and said, "I guess I'm here because I'm messing up all my relationships. All these years I fought to get to the top of my profession, thinking that when I got there, people would respect me and want to be around me, but it just hasn't happened." He crushed the empty styrofoam cup in his fist as if to emphasize his desperation. "Oh, I suppose I do command some respect down at the hospital," he went on, "but I'm not close to anybody, really. I have no one to lean on, but I'm not sure you can help me either. I've been shy and reserved all my life. What I need is to have my personality overhauled. Had I met this man when I began counseling 20 years ago, fresh from graduate school and very brash, I probably would have attempted the total overhaul he sought. But the longer I have worked with people, the more reverence I have gained for the infinite complexity of the human personality. And the more reluctant I have become to try changing anyone. One of the dangers of being a psychologist reformer is that you may be tempted to try to remake all patients in your own image. But God made each of us unique, and there is vast mystery and beauty surrounding the human soul. Good psychotherapists are something like astronomers who spend their lives studying the stars, trying to determine why certain stellar systems behave as they do and why black holes exist. And at the end, they are even more in awe of the grandeur of it all. Although I will never understand my patients fully, my goal is to sit beside them as they search out themselves. The two of us will study the makeup and watch the movements of this personality, seeking to understand. It would be as presumptuous of me to attempt to overhaul that system as for an astronomer to remake their solar system. If I can help patients understand who God made them to be, and then help them to be those men and women, it is quite enough. So I told my shy friend that I had no desire to change him into a garrulous and gregarious backslapper. Besides, it was not so much his quiet personality as his patterns of relating that were getting him into trouble. When he exchanged those bad habits for some good relational skills, his entire life was changed. He found himself talking more freely to his patients, and other doctors began to open up to him. Today, he is still an introvert, but he has 3 or 4 strong friendships now, and the last time I saw him, he was clearly a more fulfilled person. You may or may not be the life of the party. If not, that will have little to do with your learning to love and be loved. In fact, as we all will see later, you may be more capable of good relationships than the man who wears lampshades at the party and keeps them laughing all evening. In my hometown, an obscure nursery man died recently. His name was Hubert Bales, and he was the shyest man I ever met. When he talked, he squirmed, blinked his eyes rapidly, and smiled nervously. Hubert never ran in influential circles. He grew shrubs and trees, working with his hands the plot of land left him by his father. He was anything but an extrovert. Yet, when Hubert died, his funeral was the largest in the history of our little town. There were so many people that they filled even the balcony of the church. Why did such a shy man win the hearts of so many people? Simply because, for all his shyness, Hubert knew how to make friends. He had mastered the principles of caring, and for more than 60 years, he had put people first. Perhaps because they recognized that his generosity of spirit was an extra effort for someone so retiring, people loved him back by the hundreds. Friendship, a valuable commodity. Jesus placed great value on relationships. He chose to spend much of his time deepening his connections with a few significant persons rather than addressing the crowds. What is more, his teaching was filled with practical suggestions on how to befriend people and how to relate to friends. The commandment on this topic was so important that he introduced it with an opening flag. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. John 13:34-35. Those words are now almost 2,000 years old, but their currency is demonstrated by a recent study. In his book, The Broken Heart, Dr. James J. Lynch shows that lonely people live significantly shorter lives than the general population. Lynch, who is a specialist in psychosomatic disease, cites a wealth of statistics to demonstrate the unhealthy aspects of isolation and the magical powers of human contact. Even viewed from a financial perspective, our friendships are our most valuable commodity. Studies at the Carnegie Institute of Technology reveal that even in such fields as engineering, about 15% of one's financial success is due to one's technical knowledge, and about 85% is due to skill in human engineering, to personality and the ability to lead people. Dr. William Menninger has found that when people are discharged from their jobs in industry, social incompetence accounts for 60 to 80% of the failures. Only 20 to 40% are due to technical incompetence. Your past failures at relating need not be repeated.
I have tried over and over, said a musician with a crew cut, and I just as well accept it. I can't make it with people. I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life. He had come to our office for an antidepressant medication. He didn't get any pills, but he did get some help with his relationships, and the depression disappeared in the process. My colleagues and I were able to help him forget his track record and concentrate on learning the art of friendship. While in therapy, he could analyze his failures as they happened. When he was rejected, he learned to pick himself up, profit from his mistake, and try love again. It did not come easily for him, but gradually he began to connect. At the recent wedding of that musician, the delight in his bride's darting eyes confirmed that he had learned the art of love very well. His previous failures had not kept him an emotional cripple. Lincoln considered himself to be a dismal flop with people in his early years. Proposing to Mary Owens in 1837, he added gloomily, "My opinion is that he had better not do it." And after Miss Owens turned him down, Lincoln wrote to a friend, "I have now come to the conclusion never again to think of marrying, and for this reason I can never be satisfied with anyone who would be blockhead enough to have me." Yet that man went on to master the art of dealing with people. When Lincoln drew his last breath, Secretary of War Stanton, once his livid enemy, said, "Now he belongs to the ages. If we require further proof that we can learn to love and be loved, we can look at the life of Benjamin Franklin. As ambassador to France, he was the most sought-after man in Paris. But was Franklin always this popular? Hardly. In his autobiography, he describes himself as a blundering young man, uncouth and unattractive. In Philadelphia one day, an old Quaker friend took young Franklin aside and lashed him with these words, "Ben, you are impossible. Your opinions have a slap in them for everyone who differs with you. They have become so expensive and nobody cares for them. Your friends find they enjoy themselves better when you are not around." One of the finest things we know about Franklin is the way he accepted that smarting rebuke. He was wise enough to realize that he was headed for failure and social disaster, and by applying himself to the laws of friendship, he turned himself completely around. No one has to be alone. You can learn the laws of relating as surely as Abraham Lincoln and Benjamin Franklin did. Each of the following chapters will give a simple rule for making your relationships work. These principles are not original with me. They have been distilled from the experiences of patients who have become my friends and from the writings of philosophers and psychologists ranging from Socrates to Dr. Joyce Brothers. Moreover, I have ransacked history books and read hundreds of biographies to determine what made the great historic friendships and love affairs work. If you will set yourself the goal of mastering these techniques, you can become an expert at intimacy, for you can learn these skills as surely as you can learn to play the piano or program a computer. I'm not saying that these skills are easy to master, for relationships are exceedingly complex, but they can be learned, and becoming an expert at friendship will be one of the most rewarding projects of your lifetime. If you want to continue reading, I will tell you what this book is about. Some people have countless friends. What's their secret? How can I get close and stay close to people I like? What's the key to a successful marriage? Alan Loy McGinnis, pastor and counselor, answers these and many more questions concerning the all-important topic, human relationships. At the heart of each relationship, says McGinnis, is a friendship factor, the essential ingredient of warmth and caring. With captivating case histories and anecdotes about such famous people as George Burns, Howard Hughes, Helen Keller, and C.S. Lewis, McGinnis shares the secret of how to love and be loved. Learn how to be a warmer, more lovable person, how to communicate better, how to resolve tension in your relationships. These clues for getting close apply to friend and friend, husband and wife, parent and child. Another review, a warmly written practical guide, The Washington Post. It is one of the best-selling books of those days. So, if you want to read, Please go on and search for a copy.